Everything sounds good. I am muting. Good luck.
All right.
That sounded sarcastic. I didn't mean it that way.
That is a common comedian problem right there.
Hey, have a good time. I swear I'm not a jerk.
Is that sarcastic? I don't even know anymore. Welcome in to another episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult, show where potential goes to die. My name is Jessica Michaels. I'm your solo host today. Ellie is alive and well and off getting life-saving medication, the thing that keeps her up and functioning and costs more money than both my first and second car put together. So today I will be talking about something that I am actually very, very excited about in neurodiversity land, which is the start of the neurodiverse professionals community. This is a community that I have wanted to have in place for a really long time and something that I wish I had had when I was diagnosed. So I was always a kid that knew that I was different from other kids, even if the adults around me didn't acknowledge it or figured that I was fine, right? I was hyperverbal. I wouldn't shut up. I read all the time. Like, that is the thing that I got in trouble absolutely the most for in my young life, was bringing books into places where it is apparently not appropriate to bring books, like the movies. I would routinely, like when I needed to pack to go to my grandparents' house for the weekend or whatever, I would only pack books, or I would pack suitcases of books for an overnight stay. And so I think my parents kind of thought that they lucked out, right? They had this kid who gets in trouble for reading, you know, that is the nerdiest, most pathetic thing to get in trouble for. But that's what, you know, that was my life, was reading. And so I think when you're that kind of kid, there really isn't a lot to worry about. You know, there isn't an idea that, oh, this kid is in trouble. This kid is very different, you know, in a way that is detrimental to them. And so I was just that kid. I was always that kid that wanted to sit at the adults table because I understood the conversation at the adults table better than I did with the kids. I didn't really know how to play in the way that other people played. It frustrated me. Like, kids make up games on the fly, and I couldn't get into a game that a kid just made up because I wanted the rules explained to me. Like I will play this find the hidden feather game in the yard, but I want to know the rules. I want to know their time limits. I want to know, are we taking turns? Like, give me a manual before I will play. And that did not make me popular, surprisingly enough. Kids always know who's different. And so I was definitely pegged as being weird, unpopular, whatever it is. And so I never really had community. I didn't really know what it was like to have a group, to depend on people in a group, to share ideas or have camaraderie. That just wasn't a thing that I was ever exposed to or was ever used to. I didn't really belong anywhere. And when I got diagnosed, so I was in my late 30s, I was working professionally. The reason I went to even try to find out what was happening in my head is because I had consistently been in the workplace like I was as a kid, right? I was somebody who didn't really get along with people, but it was better as I was older because I was more aware of sort of how to look like I fit in. So I did better, but I wasn't great at it. And definitely in work interactions, like when I thought somebody was wrong, or when I thought something was being done the wrong way, or we were working on a group project and I would kind of take over. Like, these things that were happening to me as a kid still happened as an adult. I just had managed to file the edges off a little bit. But when I would get promoted and become a manager or take whatever the next career step would be in whatever job was I was in, all of those weaknesses would get just much more pronounced. Because in corporate America, unlike the lines they had fed me when I was little, which is, oh, if you're smart, that's what you need. That's going to make you successful. That's not really true. What makes you successful is your ability to get along with other people in a lot of ways. That's much more important. You can make up for a lack of knowledge, but not getting along with people, that you really is really going to hurt you. So I didn't really have a sense when I got diagnosed of where to go for help. My first reaction was books. Because, you know, I had been in learning and development. I'm a believer in books. I love reading. And I thought I could read my way out of this situation. Like, I've got this autism diagnosis. Then I got this ADHD diagnosis. Surely I can read enough books and it'll teach me how to be normal. So there's so many problems with that. First of all, I didn't realize that ADHD and autism were not things to be cured. I didn't know that. But thinking that there was a normal that I was trying to aim for, I didn't know, first of all, that that wasn't possible. And second of all, that that was totally the wrong way to think. But I just assumed that there was an answer to help me and books were going to be it. And they weren't. You know, the first thing that I realized is so many of the resources that were available were for kids or for parents of autistic kids. They weren't for people like me who, you know, one of my big problems was I kept having one-on-ones with my manager and he just kept saying that I was defensive. No matter what, he said I was defensive. And I did not know how to fix that. And that was not in any of the books. Then I did start to find some resource on like TikTok and Instagram. And that was more about just general neurodiversity, but still that was incredibly helpful. That was the first time I really realized that there were people like me out in the world, you know, people who had had these types of experiences, people who had heard these same things said about themselves that they didn't feel. And that was my first taste of what it was like to have community and to just have this group of people that instantly understood you without you having to explain everything. They just got it. And that was huge. I don't know what I would have done in those first months after my diagnosis if I didn't have those people to reach out to and to just provide me some sort of stability. And if you're ever at a point in your life where the thing that brings you stability is TikTok, you are in a really unique place in your life. But that's what it was. It was the place that I went to affirm that I was okay and that I was not bad or not lazy or not stupid or all of these things that I'd assumed about myself, because you really can start to feel like you're an awful person. And so I depended on that. But the thing that it didn't give me was exactly what I needed to get through my work day. And so I knew really early on after being diagnosed that someday, if it didn't exist already, I was either going to find this community or I was going to build this community, even though I had no idea how to do that. And so I really have been working towards that for most of my career, you know, most of this time that I've been working specifically in neurodiversity. So definitely years in the making. I think the thing that having community when it comes specifically to work. What that gives me is, you know, when you are working, you get feedback all the time from people, from your manager, from other layers of leadership, from coworkers. And when you're different from other people, that feedback is mostly about how you are wrong or bad, or you're not, maybe not bad, but you're not meeting expectations. You're not good enough. And when it's things that are like the way you communicate isn't good enough, the way you react to things isn't good enough, the way you feel things, the way, you know, the feelings you have about things, those are wrong. Those things are so deep-seated in you. The only message you can take in is that you as a person, you're not good enough. You're wrong. You're bad. The way that you exist is wrong. And that is a really hard message to try to overcome in your own mind, even if you are someone who knows instinctively that that is not true, that the problem is the workplace and not you. It is really hard to try to hold on to any sense of positivity at all about anything in your life when the message that you're getting for, you know, 40 plus hours a week is that you're bad or that you're wrong. You need as much positive feedback to overcome that as you can get. There's the statistic in leadership that employees need 5 times more positive feedback than negative feedback. And the reason is because, you know, not that we're little snowflakes that just need to hear how great we are all the time, but our brains are super good at remembering negative stuff and we look for it. So if you get negative feedback, your brain latches onto that and remembers that. And it doesn't even have to be like super negative. It could even be like fine feedback, but your brain remembers that and holds on to it. But positive feedback or feedback that even leans toward positive, you let that go almost immediately. So you need 5 times more neutral to positive feedback than you do reinforcing feedback or negative feedback in order for you to just end up on an even keel. So if you're getting feedback for 40 hours a week that people don't even think is negative really when they give it to you, you know, just suggestions for how you could do things differently or do things better next time or whatever, think of how much positive feedback you need outside of that in order to come out even feeling neutral about yourself. You know, this is one of the ways that we don't talk about so much about why the workplace is so damaging for people. We kind of talk about how the workplace is bad for people while you're at work. What we don't always talk about is the toll that it takes on you in all of the different ways that it actually destroys you mentally and physically, even when you're not working. So you can fix something in the workplace, but how do you fix all the damage that not only you're taking on presently, but all the damage that's been done every workplace you've ever been in for your whole life? There is so much that has to happen for you to come out unscathed from that, or even a little bit less hurt. And so I think it's really important for there to be community for many different reasons. And one really is that helping balance out some of that terrible feedback we've internalized about ourselves throughout our working lives and are still continuing to get as we work in these places that aren't good for us. Another benefit of community is as we've all navigated these workplaces for so long, for many of us, before we knew that we were neurodivergent, we've had to figure out little ways to make things better for ourselves. Whether that's, hey, here's how I decide what to work on when my manager is sitting 2 feet away from me, and here's the stuff that I work on when I'm by myself. Or here's, I've got 10 things to do, and everybody keeps giving me things to do to work on, and I can't get it all done. Here's how I handle that situation. We figured these out bit by bit by bit, just like we figure out life bit by bit by bit. But being able to share those with people can be hugely helpful, because that's like one less problem that we each have to tackle. And so you can use your brain power into, you know, attacking different, bigger, better challenges, because other people have already figured out some of this stuff. And a lot of it is really specific to the workplace. So, you know, when you read books now for autistic adults, a lot of that experience that people have doesn't really apply to us. Because one of the things I think that's harder for neurodivergent people is it's harder for us to take advice that is about a totally different situation and pull out the nuggets that can apply to what we do. Like if somebody's an amazing farmer and they tell me all about how they have managed to become an amazing farmer, it's going to be really hard for me to pick out the parts of that that I can use to go, oh, well, this is something I can apply to my work in the corporate office space. So we tend to work best, in my experience, when we're able to pull examples from people who have a situation that's closest to what we do. And so for a lot of us, you know, who are in meetings a lot and who, you know, have to have these interactions, getting advice and getting feedback from people that's helpful in that same structure can be the quickest way for us to be able to take that on board and implement something. I have to be careful not to do too much corporate speak, even though I'm talking about work, because Ellie will get mad at me when she comes back and listens. So I've got to try to watch it. Being able to have a community where you're just understood from the beginning. Like, people think I'm a jerk. The question isn't, are you a jerk? The question is, how can you take what you do and make it be a little bit more palatable for people in a way that doesn't take too much out of you? Because that's always the balance we're trying to strike. And I think it's really important to be around people who get that fundamentally. Because so much of what we hear in the workplace is, well, here is how being a jerk is bad and being a jerk hurts other people and how being a jerk is terrible. And it's like, I know all those things. I'm not doing the things that would traditionally make me a jerk. The problem is that somewhere between my brain and my mouth, when the words come out, you hear them in a way that makes you think these things. And that's the problem that we're trying to solve for, because we're not jerks. We're not bad people. We just have to try to figure out a way to make the way we are and the way the workplace exists be a little bit more comfortable, be a little bit smoother, because most of us working isn't an option. I think for a lot of us, if we had the choice, we wouldn't be working in a corporate space or working in a capitalist society where we don't have a choice. You know, people will sometimes have fairly unhelpful situations, you know, or suggestions like, oh, well, then if you have a disability, you should ask for accommodations. And that is certainly something that you can do. But the type of accommodations that we often would need to make ourselves successful are broad, sweeping cultural changes that are very unlikely to happen in a time frame that helps us, because yes, I do want the work culture to shift entirely so that more people are accepted and so that more ways of communicating and working are seen as good and normal. But until that happens, my insurance costs $1,000 a month. I have to make some money to be able to pay to survive and pay for my family to survive. I don't have the luxury of waiting for things to get better for me. I have to do something now. And I think we can work towards both of those goals at the same time, but not doing something isn't an option for most of us. So I think that this community is going to be a place where we can help each other. And how are we going to do that? I've got a couple of different ways that that I think we're going to accomplish that. The first is simply from, like I said, sharing our experience and sharing our knowledge. What has worked for us in the past? What are ways that we've found to lessen the strain on us? And being able to share that with others and take the pieces of that that are helpful. I think that's really, really important. The next piece of that is experts. Like Carol Jean, who was on our podcast recently, who specializes in burnout. That's a topic that I know figures hugely into the lives of many, many, many neurodivergent professionals. So we're going to have her come in and talk with the group so that we can gain some of her expertise. We have experts in things like prioritization and time management and rest and these things that are frequently challenges for us in the workplace. And they're going to come in and speak to the group. We'll be able to ask questions live, and then we'll post those for people to reference in the future. Or, you know, if you don't have the spoons to make a call one day, those will all be recorded, because nothing in the neurodiverse professionals group will ever depend on you being right there at that moment to get that information, because we know sometimes you can't be right there even though you want to be. So we're going to make sure all of those references are able to be accessed in different ways. We're also going to have leadership opportunities for people. Neurodivergent individuals, just disproportionately in the workplace, are excluded from leadership opportunities because so many of the things that we struggle with are seen as a failure in personality and the personality traits you need to be a leader. Oh, that person can't lead a team. They're not charismatic enough. You know, they don't smile enough when they get on calls, or, you know, people don't think that they have the right personality type to manage something. So in this group, we want people to take the opportunity to, whether it's, you know, being an expert on a call and leading the group through activities, or heading up a project, or creating a resource. We want people to be able to utilize the skills that they have and walk away with something to show for it. You know, something to be able to show, I led this team. I did this project from end to end, to be able to take back into work and demonstrate that, yes, you have done these things before. You have run, you know, big presentations. You have spoken in public. You have whatever it is. We want to find a way to give people the opportunity to do the things that they know that they can do. They just need to get a shot. So that's really important. There's also opportunity for group coaching. So group coaching is a little bit different than individual coaching in a couple of ways. Normally in a group coaching environment, we'll have a topic that is set, rather than, you know, when you're doing one-on-one coaching, you often will end up just, you know, if you have a plan, you might divert because of what's happening with that person, you know, in their life right then. With group coaching, it's a little bit less kind of in the moment. And it's a little bit more about, here's a topic and everybody kind of works around that particular topic, or everybody has an assignment that they take away, but it's not something that you're going in depth for individually. But the thing that people tend to take away from group coaching, or the people who succeed with group coaching, tend to be people who get a lot of value from hearing other people's experiences. So I would say that people who would be naturally part of a neurodivergent professionals community would likely benefit from some group coaching. And so that is an element that we're going to include for sure. And that could be by other, you know, other neurodivergent, neurodiversity coaches. So we'll see kind of how things progress. Right now, I'm kind of providing most of that, but I think very quickly it will probably be untenable for me to continue to do so. So and give the opportunity for some other personalities and some other folks to join in. So that'll be a part of it. And then we're going to have resources for people, which I think is where we're going to be able to hear a lot about other types of tools, other types of therapy, other types of resource, just whatever people are doing that may be a little out of the box or maybe kind of non-standard when it comes to what they're doing in their lives that have helped them. For example, you may remember that I have been participating in a D&D, Dungeons and Dragons, therapy, which is something that I hadn't heard of until it was put in front of my face as an option. So I'm guessing a lot of people haven't heard about it. And that's the exact type of thing that we want to be able to share with each other in terms of people's experience. Currently, just as a side note, in my D&D therapy, I am struggling a little bit because the group definitely seems to want to approach things differently than I do. My character is very much somebody who wants to just dive in and solve the problem and doesn't want to, you know, they don't really they're not as intellectual as some of the other characters. And so I just want to get in there and solve the problem, and usually solve the problem with athleticism and physicality. And my group would prefer to spend another night in town listening to see if we can gather more information or talk to every townsperson and see, you know, what their opinions are. And then there's one person though who's totally far from that and just wants to kill everybody. So I want to jump in and solve the problem and like take action. My group mainly wants to sit back and like get more details. And then the one guy wants to just kill everyone, which is like a step further than I want to go when it comes to problem solving. So it's been a challenge because I have to remember as we're doing D&D, part of the thing that you're doing is I have chosen to be somebody who's unlike me. I am the least athletic person you have ever met in your life. And so I would never be somebody in real life that is going to want to jump into a physical situation to solve something. But in D&D, that's what I'm trying to do to push that part of myself. And it's really hard to be in a situation where then my character is disagreeing with these other people, because in real life, I'd want to be one of those other people that's solving things and getting more facts and details. So it's really been an interesting challenge. So I think that participating in a community where you can talk about your experiences with some of this other stuff before it's widely accepted is great, because often we're in a position where we know more than the professionals because we live this day in and day out. The medical community, you know, the communities where we're supposed to be getting all this information from, they're behind. And so having community with people who live it every day, I think gets you more relevant information. And so that's a really important part of what we're going to be doing. And ultimately, I think, again, just helping balance out all the negativity that we take in from the world is just level of importance of that in our lives cannot be overstated. And so, yeah, I'm really excited. The group is going to be meeting once a week for our live calls. And I found that consistency like that is really important, especially for my ADHD folks, because if you put something every other week, then they lose track of time. And by they, I mean me. I lose track of time totally and will never get where I need to go. So weekly meetings where we're going to have live calls, they are going to be recorded. And people are also going to have access as part of that. As part of that, they're going to have access to all of the content that I have produced, as well as other resources I've gotten with other people or from other people that I'm able to share. There is a fee that is part of the community so that I can use that to pay experts and things and pay for resources. And so that is part of it. But for listeners of this podcast, if you are part of our Patreon, one of the tiers on our Patreon gets you complimentary access to the neurodiverse professionals community. So if you go to the link in our show information, then you can find out all of the information, both about the community and, of course, about the Patreon. So I'm really excited about this community, you know, and just trying to, again, build the resources that I wish had existed when I was diagnosed. So I hope that listeners from this podcast will come and join us, because I think it's going to be something really helpful for a lot of us. And if you want any more information about the work that I do, or getting a session with me, or having me as a coach, you can go to my website at coachjessicamichaels.com. Please, if you are a fan of this podcast, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. I'm not an Apple person, so I never quite know exactly what I should be saying. But Apple is where you rate and review podcasts. So please, please do that. Or, you know, share the podcast with friends or family, somebody who might either have a neurodivergent person in their life or maybe neurodivergent themselves. That helps us out immensely. And of course, my wonderful wife does fantastic video production work, interviews and like documentary style, and then also commercials for businesses. So if you're a small business owner, definitely reach out to her, Ellie Michaels Productions. And yeah, we will be back next week with two of us. Ellie will be back next Wednesday for another episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult. And I think that's going to do it for us today. So take care of each other out there. Bye.